Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney, the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had a tremendous time this whole week. The Danny Glover event was off the chain. It was tremendous. We got a chance to do some incredible things. We're making a DVD in reference to it. Everybody who came will receive a DVD. Also, we're going to have occupied the PGA in May 2014. We're going to ask Danny Glover to lead that 2-mile walk. So those of you who are around the country who want to join us here in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan, we will be occupying the PGA. We will have our fun. We will show them what we are capable of doing. I tell you, we are having a tremendous time. We got this income tax that we are pushing to make sure that corporations pay. Whirlpool, their executives, we are right on top of it. They have found every loophole there is in the world to make sure that they pay no tax in our community. But we're on top of it. We are going to make them pay. School board, we got 3 recalls in for 3 of the school board members, Martha Lark and Lou Buchanan. We're going to take them out. We need 2,000 signatures. We plan to have those 2,000 signatures within 3 weeks and be prepared for the election. I tell you, we are moving in the right direction in the city of Benton Harbor. We are fighting, fighting, and fighting. We believe in fighting back. And to all my target individuals, I know how difficult it is to deal with you, but I'm sticking with you. I'm going to make sure that we get something done. I do have a meeting coming up with some of the elected officials, and it will be in Chicago whenever they get back to Chicago. I won't be coming to Washington, but December the 4th, I will be in New York, and maybe from New York I'll go to Washington, D.C. I haven't made up my mind exactly. I got to check their schedules, and I'm planning on having this conference with them and find out exactly what they are due for us, and find out do they really know or are they just faking. I believe they're faking, but let's give them an opportunity. I believe that everybody deserves a chance, and also I received some DVDs from Ken Rose, which has been incredible. I'm going to be passing them out all over the community. Also to some of the folks that I'll be speaking at next week. So we're having a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous time. I'm just taking it one day at a time. But we've been battling, and we will not give up. But listen, folks, those of you out there, let's stay focused. Let's continue this fight and show the world what we're capable of doing. We must fight together. We must come together. We must do what needs to be done. We must do what's right. Let's listen to a little Martin Luther King while we're waiting, and I'll bring on my first guest, who you're going to really love, and we're going to take our time and get this thing right. Can we do that? Let's listen to Martin Luther King.
Resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink.
You are listening to the Pinckney & Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. Oh, we are pounding Whirlpool. Remember the words that come out of my mouth, boycott, boycott, boycott. I tell you, we are pounding them, and we're getting a chance to do this all over the nation. But listen, I got to bring on my first guest now, a young man who was in the service, and some things happened that, you know, we've been talking about people being in the service and all the different things that's been happening. And most of the time, most people, when it comes to the service, most people don't believe that our army or our government could be like this. But Matthew, are you there?
Yeah, Michael.
Michael, let me apologize. Michael, how are you
Michael
doing
Matthews,
today?
Michael Matthews, but that's good. I'm fine today.
Oh,
Reverend,
okay,
how are you today?
Okay, Mike, we'll call you Michael. Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself before you go into your story.
Well, I was raised in New York, and I was drafted, and instead of going into the Army, I chose the Air Force. I joined in 1972, and I was stationed at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, where I was raped. I was jumped by three individuals and raped, sodomized, and never told anybody for 30 years. And I went around with this secret, and after my sixth suicide attempt, I was getting some counseling, and I finally divulged it and got the help I needed and started finding out that there was an insurmountable amount of men who were running around that were raped in the military. As a matter of fact, last year DOD said there was 26,000 rapes in the military, and that number is 60 to 80% low.
Mm.
And out of that number, 53%, 14,000 of those were men. And they try to give the percentages, which are lower. They try to cover it up, but the numbers are the numbers, and it's those this their numbers. As a matter of fact, according to the Department of Corrections, Federal Department of Corrections, and DOD's numbers, there's more men raped in the military than in federal prisons in our country. And
wow,
nothing
that,
being
that's
done
amazing.
About it.
Those numbers are really off the chain. It's just hard to believe that something like that could be going on. You know, especially in our service. So did this happen in Missouri?
Yes, I was at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri.
Okay. What happened when you reported it? Oh, you didn't report it.
No.
Did they continue to sexually attack you?
No. I'm from New York, you know, and pretty sweet streetwise. The reason I didn't report it was because, you know, I knew nothing good would happen. I had been put on a bus home with a one-way ticket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then they would have labeled me as a homosexual, and that was
right,
the end
absolutely.
Of it, you know?
I was going to go there. I believe that would be their move, to label you as a homosexual and kick you out the service.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know people that that's happened to, and I was correct in my assumption. But, you know, I didn't know there was that many people being raped. I thought I was the only one. You know, that's how good the secret's kept. You know, I just became overly cautious and protected myself, you know. Basically became someone you didn't want to mess with, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Matter
you
of
know?
Fact, you know, you could have been made the bad guy very easily and probably could have ruined you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, I didn't know my perpetrators, you know. It was dark, and I didn't know exactly who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult to station at Missouri because I didn't know if they were sitting across the table from me at the chow hall, you know?
Right, or they might even attack you while you're sleeping at night.
Well, yeah, that wasn't going to happen, you know? It's not to me anyway. I didn't get much sleep for the last 40 years, you know? I'm pretty much a very light sleeper, you know? You become heightened all your senses into certain areas, you know? But
wow.
I've gotten better. I've had a lot of therapy now and some medication to help with the PTSD. But the actual problem is, and me and my wife have been working this. My wife's a social worker, and we've been championing this cause for the last over 10 years now, trying to get a bill passed, you know, because the problem is that the commanders, it all goes to the commanders when there's an incident of rape, and they get to determine whether it's rape or not rape. And
wow,
let me
and
tell you,
you know, going to them, you know, I don't see no use. That's like going to the police and saying that a police officer raped you or shot you or anything.
And it's kind of like this thing, you know, everybody, you know, the higher-ups are doing the raping to the younger kids. And, you know, everybody knows everybody, and it's a good old boy system. And, you know, the older guy says, well, I didn't rape him, you know, I didn't rape her or him or whatever, you know. And, you know, it's a he said, she said type of deal, and the commander's not going to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want to ruin somebody's career or his own. So what they do is they just say, well, it didn't happen. And then, you know, the person starts building some PTSD. And the next thing you know, they're discharged for personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Not for having PTSD from the rape, because they don't have to pay for a personality disorder. You came in the service with that, you know.
Right.
So they send you out there with no benefits, no nothing. And, you know, you crunch the numbers all the way back from Korea to now, and because this has been going on since the Roman era. You know, and if you crunch these numbers, there's 6 million veterans running around with PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And right now, the suicide rate for veterans is 23 a day. That number is only kept by 23 states. So only collect that numbers. The other 28 states don't even keep those numbers. Okay, so the number you can double or triple that number, and it's the problem is there's. Only 12% of those 23 a day committing suicide are combat related. So where is the other 88% coming? Most men, after being raped, try at least commit suicide at least twice in their life. Okay? Men are more apt to commit suicide after rape than women. And I want men to be able to come forward because it's because of the societal stigma, you know, and I want them to, and also people don't want to come forward because the military persecutes the victim.
Especially in the service, I could see them making the victim actually the perpetrator if they could.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, that's really, really amazing. Matter of fact, There are things that we need to get out there so people can understand how serious this matter is. Did you ever see any females or know of any females that was raped while you was in the service?
I heard of women being raped in the service. You know, that's pretty commonplace to hear of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men know. You know, that's kept really quiet. And, you know, the reason being, you know, they don't want the men getting out there. They don't care about the women getting out there that much because most of the military don't want to accept women in the military anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's forced upon them by the government, by Congress. And, you know, they think it's still an old boys club. Well, I don't think so, but they do, you know. So, you know, if it gets out there that men are being raped at such high numbers, it's going to hurt recruitment.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what guy's going to want to join if he knows he's got a high percentage of being raped?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And people don't understand that the rapists, okay, are heterosexual males. 98% mm-hmm. of them are heterosexual males. So it has nothing to do with sex or anything else. It's about power and control. And rapists are a sick individual that has something wrong with their brain. They can't even
mm-hmm.
be cured.
Mm-hmm.
But
hey,
you know,
you hit the nail right on the head when you said that. It's really not about sex when they be raping you. It's all about control. They have to have control over you, and that's the weapon that they use against people. Well, most times people don't quite understand. Because just recently in Chicago, one guy raped four women in a 6-hour period.
Reverend,
that's incredible. I would say. But it's
right.
Like I tell
Reverend,
people, and I tell people
numbers,
this all the time, it's not all about the sex.
Absolutely.
You see, you probably don't even get off on the sex. It's the control that he's looking for.
They have chemical.
Wow, that's amazing.
Agreements.
Yeah.
You know, they have
tell me this. What have you been doing since then?
We've been advocates, and we were in a movie, a documentary called The Invisible War. It was about women being raped, and my wife, being the advocate that she was, contacted them, and they didn't even know about the men. And they put a couple of us in the movie in a small section, And, you know, I just think that men didn't have their voice. So we went out and made a movie ourselves called Justice Denied.
Mm.
And people could see trailers of that at justicedeniedmovie.com. And, you know, we're trying to bring this movie out, but we've been reaching a lot of opposition. We can't get it into any film festivals. We had it into the VA Film Festival out in San Francisco, and they called us at the last minute and told us we weren't going to be in it.
Mm.
And we tried the GI Film Festival, the Big Apple Film Festival, the Boston, the Georgia one, Atlanta, Georgia, even tried Canadians, Vancouver, you know, the New York, L.A. Film Festival. Nobody will have us in that film festival.
Wow, that, you know what, that's amazing. What if I can get you in the Chicago Film Festival? I'm going to be in Chicago for a film festival. They're doing a documentary about Benton Harbor with Future and me. They're going to have several people there. I may be able to get you in there. Today the word is getting out, you know, you to more than a half a million people. People are listening to you right now, whether you know it or not. People are listening to you, and I'm going to send an email out right after the show is over in reference to you. Let's see what we can do. I think that we can do some incredible things if we put this thing together correctly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would appreciate it, Reverend, because we've run out of money. I mean,
yeah.
You know, spending a film at the film festivals costs you $100, $150. We spent all our money making this movie, and, you know, it's like we have very little donations, and it's very difficult to move this movie around without money, you know, and we're finding that out. You know, it's a rude awakening. I thought people would welcome us with open arms because of, and people would donate money like they donate to the women's causes. But, you know, it's not happening. You know, I did a Indiegogo campaign, and it just ended, and I received $250. I mean,
wow.
You know.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that was from three people, you know, so it's like, wow, okay.
Deal with this Chicago situation. See, can I get you there for this film festival that they have in there? Maybe you may not be able to on this one, but maybe I can get you there because this one's strictly going to be about Benton Harbor mostly. And they say it's going to be close to 200 people, filmmakers, that's going to be there. So that's why they wanted me to come. Normally I wouldn't come, but for this opportunity, I think that I can also put you out there too. And maybe work on you, and also help the guy that's producing the documentary for the city of Benton Harbor. Maybe I can connect you with him too.
Yeah, that would be great because you know distribution's a hard thing. We
right,
you know
right,
and,
you know we got you know and, we also have this connection with Danny Glover, which is really tremendous. As a matter of fact, I've been in contact with him this whole week, and we're just exchanging ideas on what we can do and what we can't do, and. Let's see what happened. But listen, you got about 90 seconds. I want you to say whatever your heart desire, and I got to move on.
Well, I would like to tell people to please help us with this cause. We're trying to change laws right now, and they won't listen to us. We got to get it out to the people, this movie. And if people would like to help us, they can make a donation or get in touch with us and help us. We can do so at justicedeniedmovie.com. That's justicedeniedmovie.com. And you also can look at a clip of the trailer of the movie. We would much, much greatly appreciate it.
Okay, well, yeah, let's you and I work together on this, and I'll tell you to give you the date of the film festival, and maybe somehow that I can pass it around during that period of time. Also, I'm going to get you in touch with this producer here, and maybe just hold a conversation, maybe we can talk, and maybe we get some ideas together.
That'd be great.
I think I can handle that. But listen, I got to move on. I got to let you go. I got to bring on my good friend Les Robinson. But listen, you stay in touch with me, you hear?
Yes, sir.
All right. Lee Robinson, are you there?
Hey, Reverend Pickett. Great show as usual. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Just taking it one day at a time.
But I find your last guest amazing.
Absolutely. That is something.
Wow.
And you know what? Here's the good part about it. He already made a little movie, and we should be able to do something with that and help him get a, you know, distributed or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, like you said, that's the hardest part: distribution.
But
you know, making it is difficult, but this you know, getting it distributed is even a more of a challenge.
Yeah, it is, because the problem is the folks that have power with distributor movies, they have a tendency to participate in those kind of activities that he was a victim of.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort
mm-hmm.
of they sort of protect themselves. It's no incident in terms of when you look at Hollywood, you know, a large percentage of those people.
Yeah,
they stoop to that level, and if you don't, then you don't become part of that circle. So it's unfortunate, but they have power where they can get away with certain things and pose certain immoral behaviors on people.
Mhm, mhm, absolutely, absolutely. But listen, you got a few minutes to speak about. Tell us what you want us to know.
Yeah, I just want to remind your audience that we have a goal from your audience in Detroit. Try to find 10 brave principal freedom riders to come and ride with us to Cuba this December, from December the 18th to January 3rd. We're going to Cuba, which is a worker state, which is totally different from the state that you live in under, and we'd like to get the people's experience. We'd like to be under a worker state where workers have rights and privileges and freedom to act and function as human beings. All the sickness and ills that you see in the society, you won't see that in Cuba. And plus, we think that, you know, we have a debt responsibility to Cuba for all the things they have done for African people throughout the world and the things they're still doing. And we would definitely like to encourage our brothers and sisters to show their gratitude by coming with us and also playing a role and making a contribution to breaking the blockade. You know, for over 50-some years, Cuba has been under blockade where they cannot trade with the international community. And as human beings, you know, human beings should have the right to travel anywhere they want to. That's a part of being human rights. So we'd like to encourage your audience to come with us, to come with the African Women Association. We'd like to have at least 10 brave soldiers from your audience and from out of Detroit area to Michigan area to come out with us on from December 18th to January the 3rd as we do our Black History Freedom Ride Tour of Cuba. Now, with the trip, you'll be given the privilege to spend 2 days in Cancun. You'll be at a 4-day jazz society. Plus, you get to learn to see valuable things that we can come back in our communities and make our communities better. And the only thing you have to do is just pick up the phone and call 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. So you'd like to go. And we'd love to have you. And time is of essence, so people seriously want to go. They need to start moving because, as you know, Reverend Pickett, the longer you wait, the airline tickets go up and up and up.
We try to
do it at an affordable price. We're not trying to make no kind of profit, no kind of money out of it, because we think it's important for folks to learn and see so they can come back and share. But unfortunately, you know, as you get closer to the date, they jack prices up. So we're asking our brothers and sisters, you know, if they're seriously about going, please give us a call or they can email us at African_Awareness_Association@Yahoo. And my last point, give me one more minute and I'll be gone, Reverend Pickett. I would like to appeal to the audience. I'm an advocate for a young man, Michael and Katie Fulton. Just like to give y'all a brief update of what they are going through. As of right now, they are isolated totally from the community. They have gotten the whole community to isolate them. They had a lawyer, and we found out that the lawyer was in cahoots with the prosecutor. And when they went to the court last week, the judge told him that he only going to give him 2 weeks to find a lawyer, even though the judge himself can find he could even find a lawyer who, what you call the lawyers that's supposed to do things for free?
Pro bono.
Yeah. He can find that one. So this lawyer they had, he pretended that he was working for him and had a case all the way up to this point, so she wouldn't have enough time to find a lawyer before you have to go to the court trial because they try to railroad this young man to prison. So they really, really isolated him. So I am calling your audience and asking them if they can really just do 2 things for us. Number one, if they at least could call the young lady, and Ms. Fulton, and ask her how she's doing, and, you know, and say they're aware of the case. Her number is 720-499-5146, 720-499-5146, or they can send a contribution or donation to Save Us Defense Fund. They can go to any Wells Fargo Bank, and the account number is 84825270028. One of the things we're appealing to now to the churches, we're trying to find 5 churches or 500 people that would donate at least $50, and if we can get an initial $5,000 to help at least initially start being able to initially get a lawyer on the case, we think it has a good chance. We know that the brother will win the case, but right now, he's out there. He's out there. They're out there all by themselves. And I would hate to see another innocent young brother who was on the way to become a professor to teach our kids, being framed, and end up in this pipeline again. So to our audience, we definitely like to have your support, and to the churches, we're appealing to the churches. If they can find us maybe 50 people who donate $100, 5 churches, not that difficult. And we can help each other. So on a note, Reverend Pickney, I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Hey, listen, I want you to email me that information and let me get it out for you.
Okay, I'll do it tomorrow. Will do.
All right, make sure you do it. That way I can spread the word.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, my brother. Thank you. Thank you. It's amazing how we can pull our resources together and try to help somebody. We need to do that. But at this time, I got to bring on Dorothy Dunning. Dorothy Dunning, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Just fine, my brother. Appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely. Well, we're here to help. We're here to get the word out. We're trying to teach everybody or make sure that everybody stay informed when it comes to the situation that's around the country. Where are you from?
I'm from Goshen, Mississippi. Have you ever heard of Biloxi, Mississippi?
Yes, I have.
I'm 20 minutes from Biloxi, Mississippi.
Okay. My mom, she was from... what was that place? Leland, Mississippi. You know what Leland, Mississippi is?
No, but I heard of it, but
it's
I don't know where it is.
It's in the Delta.
Oh, okay. That's like maybe 9 hours up from me.
Wow, I didn't know it was that far away. Well, that's amazing. But listen, let's tell us a little bit about you and tell us a little bit about your story, and let's get that word out there and see how we can help you.
Okay, I'm, like I said, Dorothy Dunning. I'm from Goshen, Mississippi. I was married to a preacher for 21 years, and he's deceased. I remarried. I'm just trying to give you a little history. In 2002, my first husband and me had 3 sons, and all of my boys moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'm just a grandmother who cleaned houses for a living. No shame in cleaning houses. It's an honest living. And my husband that I have now, he worked in the shipyard 41 years. He retired about 4 years ago. But back in 2009, a lady called me one night and said that your son was here on my floor, sleeping on my floor. And she said that you need to bring your son home. He's different from the rest of us. I found out later that the lady who called me was also addicted to crack too, just
mm-hmm.
like my son was. But she had enough. She saw something different in my son that knew that he didn't need to be there with them. And she told me that I need to send for my son. And I sent for my son. And when my son got off the bus, it broke my heart. I didn't even recognize him. And I asked them, they had a young baby at the time. I asked them, where was the baby? And they told me that the sister had the baby. So I said, okay, I'll put my son and the girl in rehab. Immediately the next morning, I got up putting them in, trying to place them and put them in rehab. To make a long story short, I called the young lady, led me and my son to believe that her sister had the baby. So about 2 or 3 days later, after she was there, she informed my son. They got into an argument. She informed my son. She said, by the way, my sister don't have a baby. Department of Human Service have the baby. Immediately, I got up the next morning. My granddaughter was just barely 2 months old. And
mm-hmm.
I called them, and I told them I wanted custody of my granddaughter. This is the exact words they told me. They told me I couldn't ask any questions about my granddaughter. They told me, I asked them, could I fly out? Never been on a plane before in my life, but I was willing to get there quick. Told them, can I fly out the next morning? They told me no. They told me that I had to go to my city that I live in and have to have a background check. I have to go to school and become licensed and be a licensed foster parent. That took a long time. Did not know that that was a stall tactic they was doing, because by law they could have and gave me a waiver and I could have got my granddaughter. Also, I want to back up. I had a sister that was already a licensed foster parent. They wouldn't even let my granddaughter come in under my sister, who was already licensed. Then my granddaughter could have flew out the next morning because my sister was already in the system, already set. They told me, no, I couldn't do that. Come to find out, the white lady who had my grandchildren had four children of her own. She had four more foster children. Then she had one little boy she adopted from China. But it took me a year and a half to get a visit in order to see my granddaughter. At the time, it was another granddaughter born. When I got there, my other granddaughter, she was a year and something, and my other granddaughter was about 8 months old. And they deliberately did it because they got a law, and I want people to hear me quick. They have a law on the books that if a child placed in a foster home and they there longer than 6 months, it's going to be very hard for you to remove that child out of that home. Then also, once the child be there a year, the foster parents have more rights in the natural relatives. The foster mom, the first day that I stepped in the state of Minnesota and went to meet my granddaughter, the foster mom gave me a letter, and this was in the letter. The letter, she stated that if you, it's very noble of you that you want your grandchildren, but if you remove them from my home, everybody in the house gonna die, and the house gonna burn down to the ground. I mean, just talking all crazy talk.
Wow. That could be a reason right there for them to be, for you to get your grandchild back.
That is correct. I have the letter to prove it. The letter was entered in court. They didn't do none of that. If that had been me having my own children, they would have removed my children immediately. But they, whatever this white woman wants, I hate to say it like this, but this is the way I look at it. I was looked down on as not having like status like them. But whatever I tried to do to get my granddaughters, they would not let me have my granddaughter. But both states ruled in my favor. The state of Mississippi ruled in my favor, in my husband's favor, for me to get my granddaughter. The state of Minnesota backed me to get my granddaughter. The social workers did. But they deliberately, the judge overruled both states. They said they never seen this before. Where a judge overruled both states and placed my children in a home, my granddaughters, where there's 9 children in a home, plus the grandmother, the foster mom, she was even fighting terminal-like breast cancer. They still let her adopt my grandchildren. And I just never in my life seen anything like that. Come to find out, the lawyer they had, the lawyer, he's the president of the adoption board in Minnesota. He's over the adoption board. He was their lawyer.
Wow.
Then come to find out, he's the president of the Garden of Lightem board. That's the ones who advocates for the children, for the best interests of the children. He's the president of that board. So right there, to me, all that's conflict of interest. But they got a new thing going around, and people need to wake up. They are taking children from their home, and they're taking them in large numbers, and our children have become the new money-making business. They was trying to get, the foster mom was trying to get my granddaughters declared special needs, because if you declare them special needs, she would have received $3,000 apiece for each one of my granddaughters. Now, you imagine every foster child you got in your home, you got five foster children, and you declaring each one of them have special needs. That's $3,000 apiece. Then let me tell you another loophole I found out. I found out even when you adopt the children, the foster mom could go back and claim that they have so many problems that they need money. They can even turn around and give them way more than the $3,000 a month that they were giving them. They got all type of loopholes, and this is what they're doing. They are making money off the backs of our children. I stood up in the courthouse and told them that I did not want one dime for my granddaughters, not one dime. Why would you take taxpayers' money and waste taxpayers' money to take care of my granddaughters when I told you that I would keep them free? In the black community, the grandmother have always been the backbone of the children. And there is no one in my home but me and my husband. They financially, my husband had recently retired from his job. He had been on his job 41 years. Our savings was wiped out less, I guess, in a year's time it was gone. I am in debt. I owe one lawyer $42,000. I owe another lawyer $35,000. And that's not even count what I spent out. But I also had a lawyer that flew all the way down from Minnesota and took my case on pro bono and tried to do everything in his power to help me. Didn't charge me a dime and still couldn't help me. He said he never in his life seen nothing like this before. And it come from people don't realize. I'm not saying that there are not some children don't need to be taken. There are some children need to be taken. But not when you got family members who's willing to take them. They won't even let the family members take them no more. They are deliberately placing them in these upper-class people homes. People don't realize they build rooms onto their house. They put on whole new additions onto their house. They do everything in order for them to place our kids there. Tell me what person going to give up children who is making them, who have become their money-making.
Absolutely. You know what?
It is.
Dorothy, you know, it's that's going all across the country. They've been doing that for so long, especially here in Benton Harbor. It's like a money machine. And we've been fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And what you're saying is so true. But here, I got an idea that you might want to try to use. Since you spend so much money, the guy that took the case pro bono, why don't you sue the family? Have you thought about that?
No.
Yeah,
okay,
that would be a power move. Sue the family.
I need a federal lawyer. Let me tell you, I want to get this out here. I need a federal lawyer to file a federal lawsuit. I cannot get no lawyer to come and take my case on. That's the most saddest part about it. Then I had an interview. I want to throw this out there so I can shame the devil. I had an interview with Inside Edition, and the lady who's supposed to be interviewing me, I want to put her name out there. Her name was Emily Cal from New York City, from Inside Edition. She was going to fly me and my husband out to do an interview. Once they went and talked to the white family, they decided that they wasn't going to do an interview.
Well, we're going to have to put that out there. But listen, I don't have any more time for you, Dorothy, but let's plan to talk a little bit more about this next week. I'm going to give you enough time as you want so we can get the word out there for you, and let's take this thing to a whole different level because we must spread the word. And, Dorothy, you got 90 seconds to say whatever you want, then I got to move on. But
okay.
I want you back on next week, and Miss Manley, I'm going to have her too. But let's. I want you on next week so you can talk some more about this. You got 90 seconds. Go right ahead.
I would like to see if I could get donations to get to Washington, D.C., to go and plead my case before the Department of Human Services. And I would like to come out to the Million Women's March, and I would like to have donations because I'm financially ruined. And if anybody can donate me a ticket, an airplane ticket, anywhere, a place to stay to come, so I can spread this out about our cheering. I can be reached at 228-218-6100, or else you can send donations to P.O. Box 471, Goshen, Mississippi, 39553. You can go to Dorothy Dunning Facebook, Dunning, D-U-N-N-I-N-G, and read. There have been 20 newspaper articles or more written on this case. There, I also was interviewed. It's on my Facebook, interview with Fox News. I did one with them. I think they was a little biased, but I did one with them. And I'm asking people to go to my Facebook page and read all this. And the judge that who overruled all my cases on there, Judge Catherine Quinton, the NAACP supposed to have been brought me out to do an interview. They wanted me to do one. Then they called me back and told me they couldn't do one. They changed their minds. They didn't want to do one anymore.
And we'll talk about it. Well, look, we're going to hammer it in. We're going to get on top of that. But listen, Dorothy, I truly, truly want to thank you. But listen, you always got time on my show. I want you to take your time, and we're going to get the word out there. And on that note,
okay.
I got to let you go. We'll talk soon.
Okay,
just hang on and listen to the rest of the show. And I can bring you in at the closing minutes for a closing remark.
Okay.
All right. My good friend Ralph. Ralph Point, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney, and I'm listening to every word. And I must say, and I must congratulate you, that your struggle in Benton Harbor is the proper prototype. That is the proper example for change in America, starting with change on a community level. Because your first two guests, had they been involved, or had there been a program like you are having in Benton Harbor, their problems would have been solved. And the problems of babies being, the interest of babies, babies of color being used to service the white community is historic. This is the basic problem in our communities. Our interests are subjugated to the interest of others, the economic interest. I think they call that slavery. We were involved in manual slavery in the early days, and now we're in economic slavery. And if people had court watches, as you have been doing, if people were organizing for jobs, as you have been doing, if people were organizing for local community power, which you have been doing, if people had been organizing for boycott, which you have been doing, and on and on and on. You have told us how we must proceed, but too few of us are paying attention. Too few of us understand that these are the chickens that are coming home to roost, our own errors. And I'm going to point at our organizations. We support the NAACP, and as the lady said, she went home and they have nothing to say to her. We support the wrong religious communities. We go to them and they are for sale. We see it all over the country, and it is a pandemic today, as it was in after the Reconstruction when the Ku Klux Klan took over all of the gains that were supposedly given by the federal government. And then we see in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 50s, where the black farmers were put out of business because they couldn't get loans to compete with the white farmers who were getting loans. And then we see the foreclosure epidemic, where we will end up 15 or 16 million foreclosures, mostly in black and brown families, where 75% of blacks and Latinos who got subprime loans were eligible for prime loans. That subprime loan, that criminal document that was used to steal wealth. Our children are being stolen. Our education systems are used to financially better other communities, communities other than our own. Our people are not being educated. But at one point, as Martin Luther King had stated in that speech you gave, We have to do it ourselves. We have to recognize that it is being done to us. Many people talk about reparations. We have to get the money for slaving. Yes, but first we have to stop them from making us slaves today, as stated by your first two guests. How do we do it? Implement Reverend Pinckney's program. Court watches, control your own community, put out those who refuse to serve us after they ask for our vote, those who sell our interests to those who use us as a new type of slavery. We have to wake up. We have to get rid of all of our leaders, whether they be spiritual or political, so that we are in charge of our own destiny in every area. In the area of food production, we have all of these farms in the South, but yet not a major city in the country has any relationship to the food producers who would sell us proper food. We always go around the question and never go at the question. And so today, I'm visiting Lynn Stewart in Fort Worth, Texas, in one of our death camps. And as I say to everybody, I do not want to ever hear of anyone mention the term prison, because it is the wrong word. Language is very important. As Martin Luther King was saying, everything white was pure and everything black was evil and ugly. And so we misuse words and it hurts us. We call death camps, and all of our political prisoners are in death camps, and they say they have banned the death penalty in most states, but they give us the death penalty through the back door. You need an operation, it takes them 18 months to give you an operation. You have cancer, it takes them 4 months to begin treating the cancer that they have discovered. Whatever ill you have, they kill you through the back door by not giving you treatment. And it is not one person. It is not Lynn Stewart alone. Every political prisoner is killed in the prisons by the back door. That is misuse of the medical treatment, or by no use of medical treatment. Herman Wallace, 3 days out of prison, and he's dead. And 29 years ago, they knew he wasn't guilty. He had a chance to go to the Supreme Court. Now, 29 years ago, we'll say, well, we had no black officials. Today, we have a black president. We have a black attorney general. And I heard the young lady in your last guest talk about going to the courts. Well, I tell you, this attorney general is responsible for keeping Lynn Stewart in the death camp, where she will soon be dead, and it is a program, and we support people who do not support us. We support President Obama, who does not support us. We support Eric Holder, who does not support us. We support the NAACP, who does not support us. We support the Democratic Party, who does not support us. In every major city where the Democratic Party is in charge, the schools are just a stepping stone from the projects to the prisons. It was stated earlier, 50 years ago, plantation to the projects to the prisons, and here we are today in that same circumstance because of these same evils. We must begin to educate as you are doing. We must begin to force those who claim to work on our behalf to do so. We must refuse to spend our money in any organization or institution that refuses to support us. As you say, boycott, boycott, boycott. So I encourage people to continue listening to your program and be educated. Put your money where your mouth is. whether you're going to an event or not, send your money to where you're getting your education. Education isn't free. And in that way, Reverend Pinckney will be able to look around, reach out, and help people around this nation. We know in Mississippi, where the young lady called from, a gentleman named Chukwe Lumumba, who was very much a decent, educated, just man, who happens to be of color, who became a mayor. And due to white flight, he's losing the town because of a man who does justice on the part of all people in the community, and he happens to be of color. He's a great attorney. He did cases with Lynn Stewart, the great attorney, and people reject his leadership. And so now we must reach out to support Jackson, Mississippi. We must reach out to support Lynn Stewart. We must reach out to reject those who operate against our best interest. So thank you, Reverend Pinckney. Thank you for the work you have done and you are doing. And Lynn Stewart says if you could take time on a program to talk about what the government shutdown is all about. Make people understand that it is a war on the poor. And we, my dear friends, brothers and sisters, are the poor. And we have to begin to understand, as I remember one of your guests had said, who Mr. Obama is. He's a member, or he thinks he wants to be. He is working for that special elite that he'd like to be a part of, the same as Colin Powell wanted to be a part of. And oh, anybody doesn't know who Colin Powell is? He told a great lie about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and he had personal information, and the information turned out to be nothing more than a curl paper that wasn't quite correct. And that the student was too lazy. The student who purchased the term paper was too lazy to even correct the spelling and the language. It was a prefabrication, a lie, nonsense. He bet his reputation on it. People went for it, went to war in Iraq, and then when there were no weapons of mass destruction, they kicked Colin Powell to the curb. You don't even hear his name anymore. That is the same thing that President Obama will have. But as Lynn Stewart said, if you would figure time where you could explain or have someone come on, and I would love to come on to explain to people what the shutdown in the government spending, the economy, really means, what it is about, and how it's going to continue to plague us.
Wow. Hey, Ralph.
Yes.
Listen to this. Next Sunday.
For you good time. You just
next
tell
Sunday,
me.
I want you to come on and explain it so people can understand exactly where it's at.
Right, so thank you for your work. And I hate to keep saying thank you for your work, but you're doing it.
Yeah.
And we have
to. Listen, I'm going to be in New York December the 4th.
Then you're going to be with me.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'll be there December the 4th.
Great, great. And we will have a great time, but we have much talking to do before. And
that's
so,
right.
So everybody should know, Reverend Pinckney will be my guest December 4th and whatever he's in New York. And we will continue to talk and do things. No, we will continue to do based on what we speak of, because there are so many of us who confuse words with deeds. You, my dear friend, are making your words into deeds that may change. Have the possibility of changing the face of this nation, the face of our communities. Thanks again. Thanks for the time.
All right, Ralph. Listen, if you get a chance, call me late on tonight.
Will do.
All right. All right. Now it's the big moment. We got to bring on my good friend, my guy, former BC writer, former Black Panther, former. But the greatest guy in the world, Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am indeed, my brother. It's always good to hear your voices. I always tell you and mean from the bottom of my heart, all power to the people. Thank you for having me on this program, brother.
Well, you know, Larry, it's always good to have you on the program. You know, you when I use the term Pinckney to Pinckney, I'm talking about Larry Pinckney and Reverend Edward Pinckney. That's what I'm referring to because, you know, we're connected at the hip.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Listen, I know you want to can we elaborate on Herman a little bit? The young man that just died, and you, matter of fact, you started a campaign also to let everybody know that he was a political prisoner.
Yes, yes. Herman Wallace, a veteran of the Black Panther Party, but even more importantly, first and foremost, a human being of high esteem and regard, irrespective of color or party affiliation. Herman, as I hope the listeners know, was finally released after his conviction was overturned. He was released after having spent 41 years in the prison gulag as a political prisoner. Over 40 of those years he spent in the torturous conditions of solitary confinement. This was in Louisiana. He was released on the 1st of this month, October 1st, 2013. I'm, of course, very sad to say that this dear brother and comrade and servant of the people, Herman, passed away on the morning of October the 4th, only 3 days after being released. The authorities had repeatedly refused to allow this brother compassionate release, just as they are doing right now in the case of political prisoner Lynn Stewart, and we must make sure that we turn that around. So, yes, I would urge people to go to just Google the article. The article is entitled Black Panther Party History Month and Political Prisoners in the U.S. Again, Black Panther Party History Month and Political Prisoners in the U.S. That's the name of the article. You can find it at intrepidreport.com. But if you just put in the title, Black Panther Party History Month and Political Prisoners in the U.S., it will come up. The article is dedicated in loving memory of Herman Wallace and in our determination to bring Lynn Stewart home, bring her home now. So, yes, there's a great deal of information contained in that article. Please go there. Please read it. Again, the name of the article is Black Panther Party History Month and Political Prisoners in the U.S. I've written many, many articles in a number of places. And today, as a former editorial board member and columnist with Black Commentator, I want to remind listeners that you can still, nonetheless, go to read my articles in Black Commentator, which are still online, about both Herman Wallace and Sister Lynn Stewart, as well as a host of other, myriads of other political prisoners of all colors, including Leonard Peltier, Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Jalil Montequim. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on, who are in the prison gulags, death camps of the United States.
Wow. Hey, Larry, one of the reasons that you separated yourself from B.C. is because they refused to write the article about Lynn Stewart. They refused to publish it. Is that correct?
Well, the bottom line is this. It was extremely tedious, difficult, and challenging, apparently, to get the certain person, certain individuals at BC, Black Commentator, to understand the significance of specifically some of our political prisoners, and more specifically, frankly, the plight, the current plight of Lynn Stewart, as well as the 41-year saga of political prisoner Herman Wallace, the late Herman Wallace. So, you know, you reach a point where you have to act on principles. And obviously the articles that I have written in BC have touched many, many people. And how do I know this? I know this because I've received emails, numerous emails, both nationally and internationally, from all over the world, from people who have read articles that I've written and have been touched and have been led to do research on their own. So yes, it was necessary. I did what had to be done, but the struggle goes on. I am, in fact, an associate editor with Intrepid Report, intrepidreport.com. And, you know, I'm not going to belabor the issue of D.C. I want to mention at this point in time that, in fact, Glenn Ford was the co-founder, in fact, of Black Commentator. Glenn Ford departed from Black Commentator some years before I departed from Black Commentator. Glenn Ford is now, of course, the executive editor, I believe. I hope that's the correct title. Anyway, he founded, not only did he was the co-founder of Black Commentator, but when he left Black Commentator, he founded Black Agenda Report, BAR. And, you know, we have to do what we have to do. It's all about the people. It's all about the struggle. Everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. We have to stick to our principles. And that's the bottom line. The struggle goes on.
Wow. You know, Larry, that is tremendous, you know, and I truly, truly, truly appreciate you. And I know right now that since you're no longer with BC, also some of the people out there, those of you out there who can afford to send a few dollars, Larry Pinkney need a few dollars. So those of you, I know some of my TIs has a few dollars, and I know that y'all want people to work for you. Send it to Larry Pinkney. Larry, tell him, give him your P.O. box so they'll know where to send it, and repeat it a couple of times, and let's see, can we get them moving a little bit.
The P.O. box, and I thank you again, my reverend brother, the P.O. box is P.O. box 581-822. That's again, P.O. box 581-822. Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. P.O. Box 581-822, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. And let me say very quickly that the reality is that we're all in this struggle together. And let me point out, I have never received not one penny from Black Commentator, even though I wrote for them for approximately 7 years. But this struggle is not about trying to make money. This struggle is about trying to get the word out, to organize, to get people to understand the seriousness of this struggle as it relates directly to them and this nation and Mother Earth, this world. So, again, the P.O. box is 581-822. Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. Pennies or no pennies, I've got to carry this struggle on. We have all got to carry this struggle on. So any contributions, donations that you can are willing to make are not only needed, but would be deeply appreciated.
Hey, you know what, Dean Larry? One of the things, I got my good friend Belinda Brown on the line. She's going to be our next caller. Maybe we can put something together for you and send it to you and see how that work out. But we will do it whatever we can. We are going to do it, Larry. And it's because I know that you're right in the middle of this struggle, you know. And sometimes people, you know, how do they say freedom is not free? See, people don't understand that. And they fight not to give money to people who are out there fighting. They give money to people who are not fighting, and that's why we all messed up. But, Larry, I want you to know I love you. You are a tremendous asset to this cause. And you know what? We're going to see, can we get you some dollars out there.
Thank you, my brother. Stay strong. You know I love you, too, as you put it. Stick and move. You and me, my brother, are joined at the hip.
All right. All right, my brother. Listen, take care of yourself. And now I got to bring on my good friend, my girl, my ace, the girl in the hole, Belinda Brown. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Pastor Pinkney!
What's up, Belinda Brown?
Pastor Pinkney, I was at Herman's Wallace's funeral yesterday.
Is that right?
Yes, I was, Pastor Pinkney. and the people really came out in support of him. I mean, power to the people. I'm looking at the obituary right now, and I want to read, and I hope that Larry is still listening, because these is Herman's exact words. He says, pressure raining upon me from many angles, but you are not going to see me break.
Wow,
he said, here is what I want you to know and I want you to understand. Be it at the federal or state level, the law works only for those who the powers that be don't see as a threat. To the quote, it is tangible evidence that overweighs testimony evidence, yet that rules that do not stand for Albert or I. And he's talking about Albert Woodfox that's still in solitary confinement right now. And I got to read this just like he said it, Pastor Pinckney. He said, yet that rule do not stand for Albert or I. This is why I say F the equal rights, give me equal results.
Wow, that's powerful.
It's very powerful, Pastor Pinckney. And, you know, I'm going to send you one of these brochures. I got I picked the extra one up just for you because, you know, this man, you know, he was phenomenal man. And just listening to all, you know, Ted Crump was one of the people that was on the program that spoke very well and profound at his funeral. And, you know, everything that everybody had to get up and say, I mean, lawyers, doctors, you know, people from all around the state came to see him, you know, go, you know, away, Pastor Pinckney. But it was sad, and at the same time, it was joyful. You can cry and laugh and, you know, and just, you know, feel the love and the warmth of the people that was standing there in support of him. And one of the things that Larry mentioned a few minutes ago is that he, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, they're getting ready to make a movie about him. And it says that Herman's legacy will live on through our collective actions. And so, you know, one of the things that they really stressed at the meeting, I mean, at his funeral yesterday, was to stay actively involved for the political prisoners. We have to make some noise, and we have to continually to, you know, speak out and stand up and fight against, you know, the injustice that's taking place in regards to the political prisoners. You know, they got a whole outline of different things that he experienced and that he saw, the suffering of people. You know, I think about Lynn Stewart, you know, but, you know, we got to continue to make noise for people like them, Pastor Pinckney. We cannot be silent. We got to tell these people to let them go. Let them go free. You know, let these people go home. The sad thing is that they didn't let this man out until the day. He was out one day, and he died the next day.
Wow. You know, it seemed like to me they knew he was about to die.
On October 1st, and he died on October 4th.
Wow, amazing. Amazing. Unbelievable.
Now, Pastor Pinckney, but listen to this. Another real sad thing is that they tried to do to this man in the state of Louisiana. And that's why I say, you know, we really need to, we need your help here. We need you to come down here. They tried to convict that man the day he died. Okay.
Mm.
They tried to put that conviction on him, knowing all the time that all these convictions had been overturned because the man was not guilty. Him and Albert Woodfox was both innocent men. They did not kill that prison guard. They know that they didn't.
But
they knew it for over 20 some years. and still help that man in there. The only thing that that Brother Herbert was guilty of was armed robbery.
Uh-huh.
And he should have been out 20-some years ago.
Wow.
But because he was a rebel rouser and that he would not stand down to these people, that he was a fighter even behind the prison bars, he was one of the greatest, you know, advocates for people freedom and stuff, and that he got many of people's time bought back and got people were able to be let out because of his, you know, of his faithful, you know, and his ability with the criminal justice system and his knowledge that he had to help so many people get free.
Wow, that's amazing, Belinda. That's amazing. That's an incredible story. I'm looking forward to reading that obituary that you have. I got to have that. I think that, you know, I'm also make a copy, send it to Larry, and send one to Ralph too. And well, I'm gonna spread it around. I'm gonna make sure that everybody get a copy of it. You send that to me, Belinda. Get it to me as soon as you can. Listen, Belinda, I can only give you about 90 seconds to say whatever you want. Please say whatever you want.
I gotta say this about the tremendous time and the excellent time, the wonderful time that we had down there in Benton Harbor with you, Pastor Pete.
And it was off the chain. We got a chance to really do something.
Thanks, Pastor Pinckney. I'm here to tell you it's a new day in America because of the work that you're doing, Pastor Pinckney. I am so excited. I can't wait until, you know, the date is set for you to come down here and give us the support with Danny Glover. You know, he was awesome, Pastor Pinckney. He is just a down-to-earth guy. I mean, you can see the sincerity in his heart, you know, for people, you know, to get the story told and for people's voices to be heard and for us to get on a whole new frequency here in America and change our world for the betterment of all people. And thanks to you, Pastor Pinckney, you made it happen, and it was off the chain. We had a tremendous time.
Oh, we most certainly did. I tell you, I enjoyed every minute of it. And I have been in communication with Danny, his press secretary. I've been talking to him every day. And I'm going to send everybody a DVD of the whole event so they can have it, you know, to always be remembered. Also, you was talking about May. March. March is your day. But May, he's thinking about coming in and leading the Occupy the PGA here in Benton Harbor. So we know we got some dates out there that we need to put together, but I'm hoping that he give me the okay for you as soon as possible so we can move to a whole different level.
Yeah, because Pastor Pinckney, I already got Xavier University. You know, they're one of our anchor universities here in Louisiana. Xavier is a black college, you know, and they're on board with us to support us to help, you know, for him to come. So I really need to lock that date in as soon as you can because I'm
okay.
Excited about it, and I'm starting to get the word out, you know, to let people know that we, you know, help is coming, help is on the way, and we're going to be able to organize and mobilize the people and empower them with what we need to be doing next down here in Louisiana in regards to the injustice that's taking place in our criminal justice system and try to get a lot of our people out of prison, Pastor Pinckney, that should not be there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, did you get a hold of Ted down there in Louisiana?
Yeah, I saw Ted yesterday. I got some pictures of him, you know, at the funeral. I'm gonna send you some pictures too, Pastor Pinckney.
All right, real good. You tell Ted we're on our way, so tell him to just take his time. I'll be there shortly.
Well, he's looking forward to it, Pastor Pinckney. He, you know, Ted is in the trenches down here. He's a real true fighter. You know, he is a you know, I mean, I guess I have to say second to you, Pastor Pinckney.
All right. So we can, you know, we can be on the same page. Well, listen, I got to let you go, Belinda. I got to have my TIs on, and I got to, because if they don't, they'll be picking in my house if I don't. So I got to let them come on now. And you know how I feel, because if they start picking in my house, I have to join them.
You is the picketer.
That's right. It's on my job. But listen, love you, Belinda. You keep hanging in there, and let's talk.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Okay.
All right now. Now it's T.I. time. It's the T.I.s. I know the target individuals, the people who need our help. Listen, those out there who don't know what a target individual is, they're being targeted by our government. But I got to bring on my good friend, the John Brown. The John Brown, the modern-day John Brown, the man who moves in all kind of directions, the man who's a rocket and a roller, a dunker and a dodger. He does it all. Ken Rose, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Reverend Pinkney, but I'm out in the desert, and you probably thought I was hanging up, but I'm coming in and out. So I talked to Randy earlier, and he said he'd talk about the TIs if you want to bring him on. Otherwise, I'll give up my time. But that woman in Mississippi, they took her grandkids away. She
mm-hmm.
sounds like a TI to me. She sounds like just like us. When we try to get help, we can't get it.
Yeah.
That's
why we got to pull our resources and everything together to stand up and fight. We got to do that. Where you at, in California?
Yes, I'm out in the day. I'm about 50 miles from Barstow right now, so I'm breaking in and out on you.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring on Gloria so she can have your minutes, because we're going to be short of time, and then we're going to move on to a whole different level, bring Dorothy on, and then we're going to bring Mary, and then we're going to bring Roz. We're having a great time today. I tell you, Ken, I am really, really enjoying myself, but I got to leave you. I got to bring on Gloria. Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinkney. I am here, and I have a top secret. Came off of the government computers. It's called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. So I'm going to give you the historical introduction. Silent weapon technology has evolved from operations research, a strategic and tactical methodology developed under the military management in England during this World War II. The original purpose of operation research was to study the strategic and tactical problems of air and land defense with the objective of effective use of limited military resources against foreign enemies. It was soon recognized by those in positions of power that the same methods might be useful for totally controlling a society. But better tools were necessary. Social engineering, the analysis and automation of a society, requires the correlation of great amounts of constantly changing economic information. So a high-speed computerized data processing system was necessary, which could race ahead of the society and predict when society would arrive for capitulation. And I looked that word up, and it means to surrender. Okay? They're waiting for us to surrender. Relay computers were too slow, but the electronic computer invented in 1946 by J. Presper Eckert and John W. Mulgee filled the bill. The next breakthrough was the development of the simplex method of linear programming in 1947 by the mathematician George B. Danzig. Then in 1948, the transistor, invented by John Barden, W. H. Brayton, and W. Shockley, promised great expansions of the computer field by reducing space and power requirements. With these three inventions under their direction, those in positions of power strongly suspected that it was possible for them to control the whole world with the push of a button. Immediately, the Rockefeller Foundation got in on the ground floor by making a four-year grant to Harvard College, funding the Harvard Economic Research Project for the study of the structure of the American economy. 1 year later, in 1949, the United States Air Force joined in. In 1952, the grant period terminated and a high-level meeting of the elite was held to determine the next phase of social operations research. The Harvard Project had been very fruitful, as it's borne out by the publication of some of its results in 1953, suggesting the feasibility of economic or social engineering. Engineered in the last half of the decade of the 1940s, the new quiet war machine stood, so to speak, in sparkling gold-plated hardware on the showroom floor by 1954. With the creation of the Master in 1954, the promise of unlocking unlimited sources of fusion atomic energy from the heavy hydrogen in seawater and the conquest availability of unlimited social power was a possibility only decades away. The combination was irresistible. Although the silent weapon system was nearly exposed 13 years later, the evolution of the new weapon system has never suffered any major setbacks. This volume marks the 25th anniversary of the beginning of the Quiet War. Already, this domestic war has had many victories on fronts throughout the world. Now, something else I want to read is, and this came off of the computer, the White House computer. They had no idea that someone had left it on the computer, but that's where it was found. And you can also find this information, and I strongly recommend that everyone listening, not only you look it up, but you tell 10 other people to look this information up, and then you'll start to understand what's really going on. We all of us, if we're not holding a political position, we are enemies of the state. Look up stopthecrime.net, and this is by Deborah Tavares. It's stopthecrime.net, and you will find information about silent weapons for quiet wars. You can even download this document. There's 43 pages to this. Now, something else, just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside. Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The major media destroys information. And religions destroy spirituality. And that was by Dr. Michael Ellner. So it's very important that we go to this website, stopthecrime.net, and maybe you should do it as a family group, because it is going to be unbelievable. But this is what is happening. And the reason people are so complacent and just like, oh, well, it's not happening to me, because the antennas have a lot to do with it, these cell phone towers. It has a lot to do with it. And I'm giving you another web page. It's antennasearch.com. And when you put that in, it will come up, and you can type your address in, and it will show you how many antennas are in your area. There's 42 in my area within a seven-mile radius. There's 42 antennas.
Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, a lot of times people don't understand all this stuff, but that is tremendous. You gave them a history, and also you gave them something that they can look up for themselves, which is really, really beautiful. But listen, I got to move on. I got to go to my good friend Dorothy. But, hey, I really appreciate everything you do. Just take care of your business, keep doing your research, and getting this word out there.
Well, Reverend Pinckney, I would like to take one moment to give them a phone number. When they come to this information, they might stumble and, you know, not quite understand it, but every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, We have TI Talk, and we'll answer those questions for you. The number is 218-632-0460. Then the PIN number they'll ask you for is 726-476-87#, and you will be at access to all the answers you need. Thank you for listening.
All right, Gloria, thank you so much. All right, now. Hey, Dorothy, are you there?
I'm here, Reverend Pinckney.
How you doing today?
I'm good. Let's get on into this stuff.
Absolutely, because I got to bring on my good friend, Dr. Short, and I got to bring on Mary. So take your time and get out there what you need to know, what you want
the people
to know.
Part of the issue is for anybody who's listening, you may wonder, because this is a very confusing set of circumstances. Everybody that's on your show is a targeted individual or being domestically terrorized. This has occurred since the beginning of our history. People might not think that if you go back to the beginning of the American history, and most people don't even know that, you know, this actually started, the United States actually started as a penal colony. The British would send prisoners here. And Tricia Yearwood, her ancestors actually, was one of those people that were sent as a no longer wanted in England to this country. And then what we would see is we saw the Jesuit order from the Catholic Church that would come into the country and across the country, and they tried to put the Native Americans into slavery. But because they knew the land and they could escape, they also knew where the animals would move to, as well as the gold, the silver, and all the other precious items that a lot of these folks wanted. So they decided not to hold accountable or not to keep in slavery the American Indians. But as we all know historically, what they would do is every time they found gold or anything that they really wanted, they would kill a great deal of these Native Americans who would end up on modern-day prison camps, concentration camps known as reservations. To this day, they have never had any of the treaties 100% honored. And then we also would see, if you look at the history, we have the Africans that were brought over by both the papacy, the Pope, the Catholic Church, because they were behind the slave trades, as well as the monarchies of the day. They were behind the slave trades, and it was all about money. They would bring over the Africans, and if you understand even African history, these were peoples that belonged to tribes, and the tribes were kingdoms. The importance of that is that these are the same people that put together from all the different countries, 52 nations within Africa. They were all about putting together waterways. They had extraordinary technologies when you look at Cairo, Egypt, and the pyramids. These were not a stupid people. But many Americans, sadly, were taught that every person that came to these shores were less than honored. Unless you were absolute white, it was white Anglican or white WASPs, white Protestants of the time, they were considered the white supremacy group of the time. And yet when the Catholics came into power and they kept moving in and taking over, they then began to affiliate themselves with other groups that saw their agenda as what they wanted to be, which is a takeover. Now, I'm not talking about all Catholics are bad. I'm not talking that all Protestants are bad. But what we need to look at is the secret societies that have sold us all out, the secret societies that had no problems, such as a portion of the Catholics that. And for anybody who, by any chance, was around during the missile crisis back in the 1960s when they taught children to dive underneath their desks because we were going to be taken over or possibly invaded by the Soviets, imagine, if you will, in the 1960s when they had the missile crisis, that took us virtually to a state of war, on the edge of war, and John Kennedy, President John Kennedy, backed that on down. Now, what would you think if you were to learn that the Catholic Church, which is a church, which is also a nation state, it's the only church in the world that's considered a nation state, but it could come into your country, into the United States, much like those missiles have the potential to destroy human lives, could come into this country, and they could rape and brutalize selected children as early as when they were infants. And that regardless of the laws of this country about protecting children, that in the Catholic religion, and this is in the movie Deliver Us from Evil, there's three parts of that movie. If you get it, watch it, Deliver Us from Evil. It states that the Catholics believe that girls could not be raped. Theirs was curiosity. Now, this was a systematic destroying of human beings. And if you go back to the Himmler-Hitler-Eichmann study that was out of Nazi Germany, they had no problems bringing that over, that report, that study, under Operation Paperclip through the CIA after the war, in which it talked about the rape and physical beating, abuse, sexual psychological abuse of human beings in this country and allowing it to happen. Because when you severely traumatize a child enough, and again, I'm starting at under the age of three, toddlers and on down, and this talks to the other previous speakers on Reverend Pinckney's, that when you get this and you begin to traumatize those children, that it causes long-term memory issues, short-term memory issues. You literally change the way they see the world. And that child doesn't have what we once believed in this country, which is a facade, a free will, a choice to be a creative individual, to grow up safe in communities across this country. And please know, I came from an all-white community, a middle-class all-white community. This is happening in the white communities as well as the minority communities. And we're all being sold facades of how they were going to use us and abuse us to move forward their deviant, hateful agendas. This is not about democracy or about Republicans. It's not about Democrats or Republicans. It is about criminally elite people that believe that they have a right to be like Caligula, who is a sick, deviant person, and the next person after Caligula, who believe that they could have sex or orgies with anybody else they wanted, and they would select those individuals and brutalize them throughout their life. But the next guy after Caligula was Nero. Nero is the guy who put together the whole thought process of a new world order. And it was the same kind of attitude in which those who could mess somebody else over, those who could take away somebody else's power because they were innocent and decent and naive, naive not by choice, but naive because of trauma, abuse, as well as the denial of true education. This is what's been going on in our country, and if you dare to ask, is this true? Then do you believe that President Eisenhower, who was a four-star World War II general, would come back, become president, in which he said before he left office, be careful of the military-industrial complex? I think as a president, he probably stopped short in saying, be careful of the military-industrial congressional medical complex, the educational complex, because it was taking over in every area. Now, is there solutions? Because I know this may be a whole lot of information that may be overwhelming to a lot of people. The answer is yes. Because when I was looking into getting my master's, and I have two masters, in MBA, Masters of Business Administration. I didn't get to get my master's in business administration because I was lied to keep me out of it, because I was very ethical about how I saw the world. My belief is it's okay to make a profit, but you don't make a profit if it means you're going to take the elderly's home or you're going to steal somebody's livelihood under some scam of a mortgage or a stock fraud. You see, what these people do is they operate below the letter of the law, below the laws. Therefore, they're not breaking the laws. That's what an MBA program is all about. It's about figuring out all the different loopholes in every walk of life, just like the other Dorothy was talking about with the children. And most of those children, in fact, come home or come back, if they ever do get to get back to their loved ones, physically, sexually, or psychologically very traumatized. Now, here's the issue. Those children are going to be manipulated by handlers. They're going to be messed with by these organized criminal networks throughout their entire life. And then they're going to be the ones that are set up for crimes as the rich and the elite get away with all the changes they make. And it's these kids that wanted to just be good, normal human beings, and their life is totally shattered because when they are seriously traumatized, they are highly suggestible. This is just the way the brain works. And the Catholic Church, through the Inquisitions and the tortures that they did for decades, for centuries, they knew how the human brain works. So did Hitler. So they're doing this to selected children who will become adults, denying them good lawyers to put them away, when in fact they're victims of the elite and this methodical, deliberate, and intentional brutality.
Wow, that's amazing, Dorothy. Dorothy, listen, you got 90 seconds. Going to close it out with the last 90 seconds, then I got to bring on Dr. Short. Go right ahead.
The solutions are twofold. It is time to recall your senators and congressmen and good, decent people up there who will sign an oath of absolute accountability, that they will not rip off people. It is also time to get people in government who will write expansionist language. What do I mean by that? That they will totally shut off all the loopholes for somebody ripping them off under the auspices of capitalism and profit. When the American people are in a dire situation where we cannot create jobs because of the criminal elite who have shut off the mom and pop systems, that means that we are under attack, and it is not because of the good and decent people. It is because of these criminal elite people and those who have signed on to be part of them, because they want a different order, and the order is not about fairness and ethics. It is about using and abusing the children of America for whatever absolutely disgusting, inappropriate, inhumane ideas that they have.
I tell you, you know, what you have just went through is so crucial, and it's the same thing that the first Dorothy was talking about. She's trying to protect her children. But listen, I want to stay in touch with you. You and I need to talk some more, but I got to move on. I got to bring on my good friend, Dr. Short. Well, I got to bring on my good friend, Mary, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney. Good evening to you. Good evening to all of your wonderful guests today and, of course, to your radio listening audience. This is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. I am a targeted individual. My whole family is targeted because we expose the government program of arresting and murdering the mentally ill in America. We also expose the Jenny Cochran firm. That seems to be a COINTELPRO operation that's operating in the black community to defraud blacks who seek justice after police murders and after catastrophic injuries caused by negligence or design by major companies and corporations. For instance, I have an article in my new blog. It's called Legal Victories. And a mediator, a legal mediator, explained why the Jenny Cochran firm was able to get away with denying justice to its clients, a class of black people who sued their employer for discrimination. At least they tried to sue their employer, but they went to this Cointelpro law firm, the Cochran firm, and the Cochran firm defrauded this class of black people. They took their signature page, where they had them to sign a confidentiality agreement for mediation. They fraudulently removed that signature page and slapped it on the back of a settlement agreement and settled those people's lawsuit without even consulting them. And when the people sued the Cochran firm for fraud, the court there in California gave the Cochran firm the victory rather than the people they defrauded, black people, and they took it to the Supreme Court. They appealed it. When it got to the Supreme Court refused to even hear the case because the Cochran firm had had the people sign a confidentiality agreement, and therefore they said it would be a wrong for them to hear something that happened under confidentiality. Now, can you believe that? The court would not even hear the people's case because the Cochran firm had tricked them. This is a class of black people who went to them for a race discrimination case against their employer. They would not even hear the case because the Cochran firm had had the foresight to get them to sign a confidentiality agreement regarding mediation that they never went to. So these are the sort of crimes that are being done through the Cointelpro Cochran firm against black people coast to coast. And because I am so censored and persecuted, they were able to recently sign a case with an individual family right here in my own county. That's DeKalb County, Georgia. A young boy, a teenager, 16 years old, decided to skip school one day. That's truancy. Police shot him, shot the boy. He was guilty only of truancy. They shot him in the arm. He's having operation after operation. We don't know whether the arm will ever be back to itself, whether it would be useful to him. And the Cochran firm is to represent that teenage boy and his family against police in DeKalb County, Georgia. And the police in DeKalb County, Georgia, and the Cochran firm, they work together like white on rice. So this family was not allowed to know that they were hiring a police attorney when actually they felt like they were getting Jenny Cochran. You know, Jenny Cochran, people, has been dead for about 6 years, and it's time for people to wake up and know that people are misusing his name in order to defraud blacks all over America. And so they sent police to my house because I wrote an article about that boy whose family is tied up with the Cochran firm in order to suppress them, and they don't even know it. So I wrote an article about it, and the next I found out why the police came to my house, 3 cars from the sheriff's office last Sunday. They came here also, I think it was on Tuesday, and they demanded to see my son. And I said, he's in his room. What is it about? They said, we need to see him. And so I went and knocked on his door. The police stepped in my son's room where he was lying on the bed with his 2-year-old daughter early in the morning. And the police said to him, what you reaching for under that cover? Now, what was that for? Did they intend to have a shoot up in my house lying and saying he was reaching for something under his cover? He's on the bed with his daughter. And I said, he doesn't have anything under his cover. He's just waking up with 2 police standing over him. And so then, guess what they came here for, Reverend?
What was it?
It was to serve a warrant, an arrest warrant, on a closed-out case. A closed-out case that was a little simple marijuana possession case. They said 2 black police officers. 2 black people. You know, it's a damn shame how black folks are allowing themselves to be used and misused to suppress families for the system. It's a damn shame. You know what? honestly, we need black police officers. We need black people in city government, state government, county government, and federal government. But we don't need your butts if you're going to sell out to the system. We don't need you because you have become the problem. You come in here and threaten my son, talking about what you got under your cover, over a little simple marijuana possession charge, and try to arrest him on a closed-out case to intimidate me for trying to warn people about the federal government's COINTELPRO program to disrupt black people from having equal justice, yes, through the Johnny Cochran firm's name. Because it's not his law firm. He's dead. He doesn't have a law firm. He doesn't have anything in the world at all. He's gone. This is a COINTELPRO operation that is being is defrauding black people coast to coast. And no matter how many black folks I tell about it, they know that I'm under suppression. I'm followed. I'm stalked. My finances have been cut off. How many of you, when you get up and speak to people, how many warn folks that the government has a new COINTELPRO operation? It's called the Johnny Cochran firm. That is what is happening, and I have laid it out for you. I cannot make this stuff up. I dig the lawsuits against them out of legal journals, and I put it before the public. They don't put it before the public because it's all secret. Do you think the Catholic Court put before the public what it feels about raping little girls? Do you think that they put before the public what they're doing to people with these cell towers? Do you think they put it before the public? No. The media, which is owned and operated by the U.S. government, basically, and by elitists who profit from their own suppression of information, will not publish anything about all the lawsuits against the Johnny Cochran firm. Out there before it's classes of people, individual people, they won't publish it. When the people sue the company themselves, they won't publish the lawsuits. But I get the lawsuits for you, and I tell you about the many, many hundreds of black families who are defrauded under that COINTELPRO operation, and it is up to you. You're listening to me. It is up to you. The next time you stand up before a group of people, ask them to go online and look up the Cochran firm fraud. It is still going on. They just got a Georgia family and suppressing my family last week. They just got a Georgia family, the little boy shot by police, and these people and the police are united in suppression against black people and suppressing cases when the police shoot or kill individuals. That's their job.
Wow.
To cut
hey,
down
Mary, listen,
on your opponent or
you got about 90 seconds, Mary, and I got to bring on Dr. Short, and I got to bring on Rod. So go ahead with close it out with your statement. Tell us what you want people to know. 90 seconds. That's it.
Okay, 90 seconds. I want people to know in 90 seconds that silence is consent. I said that silence is consent. If you sit here and be quiet about the COINTELPRO Cochran firm defrauding families after police shoot down their relatives, secretly arrest and murder their relatives as they did to my brother, if you let this go on and you never mention it to people, your silence is consent. Not only is it consent, but it is complicity what's going on. So I want to thank you, Reverend Pinckney, for all of this. This is a wonderful show today. I ask you, if you didn't get to hear it in total today live, go to Reverend Pinckney's blog talk show at Facebook and access all of his wonderful shows where people are able to go online and have their say. And I thank you very much for all that you do to give voice to the voiceless and to expose the corruption in the United States of America. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney.
All right, and thank you so much, Mary, for all you do, too. We really appreciate you. All right. Dr. Short, are you there?
Yes, Reverend Pinckney, I am here and, of course, electrified to hear all of the good news and information, in particular my sister Mary Neal in Atlanta, Georgia. Reverend Pinckney, my reception wasn't great, but were you able to have Dorothy Dunning or Sister Shahid from Philadelphia? I'm sorry, from Pittsburgh.
I had Dorothy on, and I'm going to get Sister Manley next week.
Okay.
I'll give her a lot of time to say whatever she needs to say. I just didn't have the time today. We got so many callers that it's just too many callers. But I appreciate it. I love the thought people calling in. Please don't stop calling in. Whatever you do, if you wish, she's still on the line. I could give her about 5 minutes of your time if you wish.
I would give her some of my time, and because you can come back to me. I'm going to go very quickly. Reverend Pinckney, remember several months ago, you and I agreed that most people don't know that we're targeted individuals, both you and I.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, what the longest targeted individuals in recent human history, Malcolm X's daughter, Tibba Shabazz, she's being targeted by the same person that targeted you and I. First, a woman, a very unscrupulous woman. Her name is Margaret Hall. Margaret Rose Hall. Hall spelled H-A-U-L-E. Google her name, Margaret Rose Hall. She is a convicted harasser. Tried to infiltrate Banco. Tried to create problems with stalking and bothering me. And we talked about it, Reverend Pinckney. Remember that? And
I certainly did.
She was supposed to know something about the NAACP, and she was trying to trick you. And we turned her loose. Turned out she went and has found some way to instigate herself into our effort to try to get justice for Al-Shaheed, Alhaj Malcolm El-Shabazz, the grandson of Malcolm X, murdered on May 9, 2013. And in this, she's gotten close to Malcolm's mother and has fed her poison constantly against myself, representing Banco, as well as my sister Roz, Roz Cross Radcliffe for the Judicial Justice Movement, the Free Wesley Snipes Movement. To make a long story short, God is good. Sometimes when you stand, people see it. A young woman down south had watched and all along had been collecting vital information. She had been the key to all the information we found out about this man being murdered, being assassinated. And so there's a huge conspiracy, and we have a break in the case. And when there's more time, we're going to talk about more, but I want everyone to know that even if you just talk to and you keep standing, if you keep communicating and finding trustworthy people and keep pushing for justice, other people will join you. They will join us. Let us pray for Malcolm Shabazz's mother, Kabila Shabazz, because she's been manipulated before. She was manipulated against the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. Now she's being manipulated against me and also against us. Let us pray for her, because we now know that there are several people who knew that Malcolm had been attacked on May 9th, waited for him to die, and systematically manipulated and suppressed the information. A lot of things were done. You tell me. I want y'all to tell me that you've ever seen a preacher or any kind of religious figure do a funeral with sunshades on.
Interesting. Listen,
tell me,
what's he wearing
sunshades for? I mean, are you feeling me? Have you ever heard of sunshades? I mean, the officiant of the funeral wearing sunshades? I'm talking about not transitional lenses, but Ray Charles bump into the wall, blind man bluff sunshades.
Wow.
So when I sent out an email the other day, now folks are trying to harass. So we are probably going to have to file charges because I'm being harassed. It's official. I've been targeted. I sent you the document, Reverend Pinckney, to prove that this is a dangerous person. Many of you in the movement out there, be careful of the people that approach you. Be careful what they say about people that you see standing up. We had a woman. She was targeted. She targeted me to set me up to be put in jail. She's claiming she had a daughter that was being raped and tried to appeal to racism and assuming I just hate white folks. Not true. Remember that Reverend Pinckney? And one man got harassed and abused by the police. One of them was supposed to be me. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness in high places. Be careful. But I want everyone to understand, let this be real to you, that this woman was trying to get to me, to go after Dr. Pinckney, to go after the TIs. We are in a struggle. We need people's financial support. We need you calling. We need you listening. We need you paying attention and being vigilant. I want to remind everyone, this woman also is spying on the National Million Women's Movement, to which I'm a volunteer. We have a rally for October 25th. There are so many things going on. If people stand up, be prepared for liars, for snitches, for blackneck traitor-type people to emerge, criminals.
All
and
right,
Dr.
Sure, I got to move on.
Let's remember that they set that woman up once before, and now they're using this woman to try to get up.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Larry Pinckney, just give me that mailing address real fast, and I got to go to my friend Ross.
All right, brother. The mailing address, of course, is Larry Pinckney, P.O. Box 581-822, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. P.O. Box 581-822, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55458. Love you, my brother. Stay strong. All power to the people.
Hey, all right. Take care of yourself. Raj, go right ahead.
Okay, I'm so blessed to be here. I have so many praise reports. I thank you all for your prayers. LAUSD, Los Angeles Unified School District, called me from the president, the office of the Board of Education.
Was that Warren Fletcher?
What?
Was that Warren Fletcher who called you?
No. This is from the Board of Education, Richard Valdovic.
Okay,
my friend,
go ahead.
I'm not sure how to pronounce it. My friend George Bizzetti, Director of Policy, Congress of Racial Equality of California, wrote him a letter and said, in my classroom, all these students sat in toxic chemicals for months, and they could be as sick as I am, and nothing was done. The paramedics weren't called, HAZMAT wasn't called, they're not paying for my medical, they're not paying me, I'm losing my house, I can't pay my bills. Well, they called me. I was shocked. And I have to get another, I sent them my article from Daily Censored, Rozzy Press, but I have to make a shorter version of it to send him so he gets it. But this is child abuse. Child abuse at LAUSD. Charles Smith, the teacher, died of being sprayed with toxic chemicals when the paramedics weren't called and HAZMAT did not clean up his room. And because they don't want to pay you, so they don't give you the proper medical care, they get doctors writing bogus reports and judges making up medical diagnoses, and they think it's fine. So anyway, I love what Ralph said. I love what everybody said today. I know that Dr. Short likes white people because I'm white, so I know that. And Mary always has something for everybody to hear, so please listen to Mary Neal. She's a wonderful lady. I'm off to the protest to support the truckers and to impeach Obama. And also, I'm going to court on Thursday about my home health care for my workers' comp case. Workers are being killed off across America, millions of them. The insurance companies are running the show. I don't understand why everybody loves Obamacare, thinking it's free. They can't even do the IRS scandal. They can't even take care of anybody except look into their money and their situations and trying to destroy their lives. And we're giving them our health care, our personal information. Nothing in this world is free. Everything you have to work for except the things that the Lord gives us. So I'm going to court on Thursday. It's not a trial. Please pray that they decide to give me my home health care and we can end the nightmare already. If not, my case goes on and on. more and more things happen. A man running, Christopher David, against Henry Waxman, who's going to announce next week, came here with the staff, read about my case, and they were shocked what LAUSD, California Workers' Comp, had done to me. Judge Gerald Cohn and Dr. John Stahlberg. Everybody gets it. Everybody gets how sick I am. And this is fabulous news. So he's going to use my case.
Wow, that's amazing, Roz. I tell you, you know, we've been praying for this, and now we got it. But listen, we don't have any more time left. But I just want to remind everybody: boycott, 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 boycott all Whirlpool products, all Florida products. We are boycotting until they get sick and tired. We got a recall of 3 board members here in the city of Benton Harbor. We are moving this thing to a whole different level. Those of you who are out there, remember. Pinky word, boycott, boycott, boycott. Keep your money in your pocket, and we do not have any more time today. And I hope to see everybody again next week, same time, same stage. Have a beautiful night, everybody.